This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, Bills Mafia. We know there's only one topic every day. All Bills, all the time. And now Matt Bove and Sal Capaccio are going really deep, talking Bills all year long, because it's always game day in Buffalo.
So I am back from Florida, and Sal has just begun his trip to Australia. I'm recording this on Monday evening, which means it is early in the morning over in Australia where Sal is. Welcome to another episode, everybody, of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Matt Bove going to be riding solo with you for the next couple episodes. We are going to have guests. That starts today with Mark Shalareth. I've got a couple other people lined up for later in the week. And then Sal will get back and we can get filled in on his trip to Australia. I'm very curious about that flight and about the trip and if he actually did meet any Bills fans while he was down there. We were both in Orlando last week for the NFL owners meetings. After the owners meetings, I went to Disney World with my family for a couple days. We had a couple friends who met us there as well. I'll talk about that a little bit later in the podcast because I have a confession to make. I'm teetering on Disney adult. I don't think I'm fully there, but I'm close. I'm closer to a Disney adult than I am to somebody who doesn't care at all about going to Disney. And hey, different strokes for different folks. I don't care what you think. You probably care or have some sort of opinion on what I'm going to say about Disney. Maybe you will, maybe you won't, I don't know. But I had a great time with our family and with our one-year-old. And then obviously the reason we were in Orlando was for work, was for the owners' meetings. So now that we are a week removed from hearing from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, and then all the other different conversations we've had down there, I have some thoughts. And I think my biggest thought is I really do think that they are going to draft a wide receiver. I don't think that it's smoke when Brandon Bean goes on the Pat McAfee show and says that they're going to draft a wide receiver with every pick. I know he's kidding. I also don't think that they need to like shy away from it. I don't think that they are trying to make it seem like that's not what they are going to do to try and throw people off. I think most people realize that wide receiver is the most likely outcome for the Bills. And the people who I had conversations with didn't really pour water on that either. It really does seem like most people around the league know that the Bills are shopping for a wide receiver and they need to get younger at that position. That's a great sign if you're somebody who thinks that this wide receiver class is as good as a lot of the experts out there think. I can't sit here and tell you that I watch all of this tape of all of these wide receivers, but a lot of my intel comes from just different conversations that I'm able to have with my peers, with my colleagues, and then people who are at events like the NFL owners meetings. And it seems like this class is very legit. That goes back even to the combine. Some of the draft gurus, draft experts that I talked to at the combine were like, Matt, this is like really a legit class. So when you take that and the Bills, where they are as a team, and you combine that all together, I just think it's a little bit too much of a layup. Now, that doesn't mean it's a slam dunk, right? Because you could have a guy there who slips to 28, who you never thought was going to be on the board, and run the card up. Like, Greg Rousseau is a little bit of an example of this. Greg Rousseau is a player who I know the Bills really, really loved and didn't anticipate getting him where they did. I don't know if going into the draft, we all knew that it was definitely going to be an edge rusher. I think that year was pretty, it was not maybe as obvious as wide receiver as this year, but edge was certainly a position that people talked about, but they just loved the player so they couldn't pass him up. This year, maybe there's a player like that out. Maybe it's Chop Robinson. Maybe it's one of the defensive tackles. Maybe it's a guy who they think is a perfect fit for what they're trying to do. But if that player isn't there, then I think they lean on wide receiver. And maybe, if the Bills are lucky, that player that they absolutely love also happens to be a wide receiver. Maybe a bit unrealistic to think like Brian Thomas would slip that far, or Adonai Mitchell would slip that far, especially after Adonai Mitchell just had the workout that he had at their pro day. But I also think that the Bills are not afraid of maneuvering. I'm going to admit I was wrong. The last episode we recorded, right after it was right after Sean McDermott had talked, and I said, it's not like you would need a third round pick to move up to where the Bills would need to take one of those guys. After looking at the draft charts, that is kind of what you would need. But that's not the only way you could do it. You could use your first round pick and then maybe your fourth and your fifth to try and move up and get a guy. Having a third would certainly be helpful, but that's not going to happen. And Brandon Bean was pretty candid when he talked about how he thought the Bills were kind of on the short end of the stick with the whole compensatory formula. Different conversation for a different day. But yeah, so I was wrong on that. I just think that wide receiver, after coming back from Orlando, after just kind of letting all of this digest for a week or so, it so feels like the Bills are in on one. And then you have Josh Allen going on a podcast talking about his favorite prospects at wide receiver in this draft class, and he's able to rattle off like three or four names of the guys who are all around when the Bills are expected to be making a pick in the first round. I know that these guys follow the game, but like Josh Allen is traveling the world and going to all of these different premieres in Paris and overseas and doing all this cool stuff. Like, he has other things to do right now in the offseason than be studying up on wide receivers. I'm sure his input is listened to. I'm very confident that he has had conversations with Brandon Bean and other people in the front office of like, hey, you know, if that guy is there, if Brian Thomas is there, he would make a lot of sense for us, but he's got other things to do. But the fact that he knows about all of these different guys, I don't think he's just, you know, like casually. I think that he knows about them because he knows that there's a very good chance his team gets a wide receiver. The other thing that I took away from the owners' meetings, and it's a little bit contradictory to the point I just made, they really like Curtis Samuel. Curtis Samuel has the stamp of approval for Joe Brady. Sean McDermott called him an exciting addition. It feels like their visions of Curtis Samuel in the short term are much more of a wide receiver two type player than a depth guy. But I also think they realize that they need to address wide receiver, so eventually he can be more of a depth guy, or he can stay in the same role if you eventually move on from Stephon Diggs. I am very confident that their top four wide receivers next year are going to be Stephon Diggs, Curtis Samuel, a player that is not currently on their roster, and Khalil Shakir. So who is that guy that they ultimately get? I don't know who it's going to be, but I'm just pretty confident that it's going to be somebody that they draft fairly early in this draft, whether that's the first pick, whether that's a trade back into the second round to try and maybe recoup another asset and get another day two pick, or it's just where they're actually sitting in the second round. There's a lot of intriguing options, but I do not think any less that the Bills are very much in the wide receiver game. The one other position that I think could make things a little bit more complicated is defensive line, whether that be a defensive tackle or an edge rusher. I don't think they're banking on a huge season from Von Miller. I think that the fact that he took the pay cut that he did, given the salary ramifications that there would have been with him, this is not like, okay, we're super confident he's going to bounce back. I think this is, we didn't have many other options, so we need to keep him around and just hope for the best. So then after that, it's Greg Rousseau and it's AJ Epenesa. I asked Sean McDermott at the coach's breakfast about AJ Epenesa's growth, and he said the last word you said, growth, is the one we need to really focus on because we need him to continue to grow in a starter's role. So they're considering A.J. Epenesa a starter. Now, the Bills don't just have two starters because that is a position that they rotate so much. But I am a bit skeptical about the strength of that room if their top guys really are Greg Rousseau, who's had health problems over the years, A.J. Epenesa, who has been inconsistent, and Von Miller, who is coming off far and away his worst season as a pro. And I know the circumstances. There's a lot that goes there. So I do think edge rusher is very much in play. Chop Robinson's an interesting name just because he's a player that's kind of like Von Miller's body type. So maybe that's the mold that they're looking for. Or maybe they're looking for a guy who's a little bit more prototypical, the player that they ended up drafting, like guys like Rousseau and Epenesa and Boogie Basham back in the day. So we shall see. Defensive tackle, I still think, is in play, even though it's a position that they've continued to address. They've added multiple guys now. Daquan Jones is going to be their starter, but there's going to be those other guys who get rotational play. Keep in mind, though, whatever they don't do in the draft will likely be how they spend their money with Tre'Davious White's cap hit, the $10 million that they get post-June 1. So it's similar kind of like what they did to Leonard Floyd, but we shall see. Also, the fact that I just said Tre' White, that has happened since we last had our podcast. Tre'Davious White signs a one-year deal with the LA Rams. It's just weird seeing Tre' White sign with another team, frankly. It feels like that's a guy who is a Bill for life, and the fact that he is no longer a Bill and on another team on a one-year deal is just, I think, very sobering, a sobering reminder that the league is a business, and that I know that we always hear that term thrown around so often, but when you see it end the way it did, like Sean McDermott was really raw talking about Tre'Davious White. I think this one really hit him hard just from the sentimental standpoint of it being his first pick, but also knowing the caliber of player Trey once was and how much the injuries have kind of derailed his career. So any talk of a Tre'Davious White return that was kind of left open-ended at the owners' meetings with the comments from Bean and McDermott were the next day kind of put to bed when Tre'Davious White signed a new contract with the Rams. So from just a human standpoint, wish him nothing but the best. He was always a great guy to work with. At the end, he was not as big of a fan of the media as he was in the beginning. I just think that his perception on the league and after the injuries and everything changed. But those are the types of players you root for. His family, what he came from, what he has turned himself into. So I will always be a fan of Tre'Davious White, the player. I know you got to take yourselves out of it a little bit in the position that we're in. But after watching what he has went through in Buffalo, I know that I am not alone in a lot of people here in Western New York rooting for him to have success down the road. All right. So those are just some quick thoughts coming back from the owners' meetings, but there's a lot more to talk about, specifically with the draft, with free agency so far, and some of the other teams in the league. So on the other side, or the next segment, I'm so used to saying the other side of the break, in the next segment, we will hear from Mark Schlereth from Fox Sports, also 104.3 The Fan in Denver. He'll join us on this podcast. We'll be right back.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Sal Capaccio from It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. It's not just a podcast, it's the 25th hour of your day, your weekly source for all things Buffalo Bills. Right on time, your time. In the car, navigate the streets with NFL wisdom in your ear. We accompany every errand you need to run. Washing the windows or vacuuming the carpets? Don't just clean, conquer. Podcasts make you more productive because we fit perfectly into your schedule. Follow It's Always Game Day in Buffalo in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, joined now by Mark Shalareth in Denver now, multiple Super Bowl winning player, now covers the Broncos, the entire league, Fox Sports, 104.3 The Fan in Denver. When I was doing my homework on you, Mark, I had forgotten one of your Super Bowls was against the Bills. What do you remember about that? What do you remember about that game?
Well, I mean, I remember us being, you know, at the time we were with the Redskins at the time, we were just kind of a juggernaut, ran kind of roughshod through the entirety of the season. And coming into that game, you know, we had given up 9 sacks and that was our 19th game total. Gave up no sacks in that game either, but like we were number one or top 5 offense, top 5 defense, and top 5 special teams in the league. And so ultimately for me, there's 2 things that really resonate with me. One was, at the time, your guys' defensive line coach, you know, tongue in cheek, went through our offensive line and made fun of all the guys that played. And there are very few times I'd ever seen Joe Gibbs truly pissed off about anything. And Saturday night, our Saturday night meeting was Joe Gibbs getting up and reading that article, and he was pissed. I mean, legitimately angry. Because for him, the backbone of our football team was our offensive line. And he always preached it. He always believed it. It was the way it was. It's one of the reasons that he won 3 Super Bowls with 3 different starting quarterbacks. And he believed in the sanctity of that group and what we meant to that organization. And he was truly angry about that particular article that came out. So there was that aspect of it. There's a couple of things I remember. On Thursday, we got together the 30th anniversary. We had about 30 guys, 25 guys on a Zoom call with Joe. And one of the stories was on Thursday, we never took our pads off. So we were always in full pads. We were in full pads on Fridays for practice. And we are just absolutely killing one another on a Thursday practice before the Super Bowl. I mean, it is just a full tilt scrimmage. And John Madden is there because he's doing the game. And Joe has to like blow the whistle and like calm practice down. And he's like, I gotta call this practice. Our guys are going to kill each other. Like that. It was such an intense practice. And the story goes that John Madden turned to Pat Summerall because they were at practice watching our game, go, the Redskins are going to kill the Bills. Like they could absolutely kill the Bills. And so, There was that aspect of it. Now, I think finally, I just felt like we were such a good team and we were so like such a machine. It really was. There was like this pressure to win that game. Like after that game, I didn't feel euphoric or anything like that. I mean, I was happy that we won, but it was more relief because we were that good throughout the regular season. You know, started off 11-0, lost a game at home to Dallas. Lost our last game of the season against Philadelphia. We went into that game, by the way, with only had given up 6 sacks total going into that game and gave up 3 in that game as we pulled all our starters, ended up giving 3 in that game. And then we finished the rest of the playoff run. We beat Atlanta, we beat Detroit, and then we beat the Bills without giving up a sack. And so we were truly that good as a group and truly that good as a team. So it was more like, to me, it was just more like, gosh, thank goodness that's over and we did what we were supposed to do, winning that game.
Well, I think that everybody who's listening to this podcast is probably a pretty big Bills fan. So I don't know if they're going to appreciate the walk down memory lane that I led off with, yeah. But I'm glad that you did it. And you kind of naturally set me up for one of the questions I had about the Bills. You know, when you were talking about the pressure that you guys had, that's the sense here now, right? Like just because they haven't gotten over the hump, they've been so close. And it feels like there's a lot of people wondering, well, if it hasn't happened already, will it ever happen? From your perspective of somebody who's won it and now covers the league, what do you think of the Bills at this point in the stage that they've kind of been, you know, well past their rebuild, but just can't quite get there?
Yeah, I am. I'm a big Bills fan. I'm a big Josh Allen fan. I think they're a damn good football team. I think they're a really good football team. And I like their head coach as well. I just think that sometimes, you know, and this just comes from my perspective as a player and, you know, playing late in when John Elway's career where it really was more about the team than it was necessarily about John Elway. And remember, John had drug teams to the Super Bowl, you know, carried them on his back, so to speak. And then they got there and just got absolutely drubbed, you know, by San Francisco, by the Giants, by the Redskins. So, you know, my perspective is always great quarterbacks can take you to a place, but great teams win championships. And some of the time when I watch the Bills, I always feel like it is almost from a coaching staff standpoint, from an organizational standpoint, they get to a point where it's like, okay, Josh, go win us this game. Okay, Josh, now it's on you. And I always feel like John Elway used to say this all the time. Hey, you guys first, second down, that's your job. My job is to convert on third down. And there needs to be this overall team aspect of we've got to take the weight off of your shoulders. And I felt like it came to fruition in that game against Kansas City, where the Bills, I thought, were pretty much dominating that game. And then all of a sudden, they're running the ball down the throats of the Kansas City Chiefs. They're just crushing them. And then all of a sudden, somewhere in the, you know, late third, early fourth quarter, then it was like, okay, Josh, go win the game for us. And I always look at that stuff and I'm like, no, great teams win football games. Great teams win championships. And it always just feels that way. Now, you have to understand, I probably haven't done a Bills game in a couple of years since I last broadcast a Bills game. So as, you know, as a game analyst, I got to watch every Broncos game pretty closely because I live here in Denver and I do a local radio show. But when you're not calling the game, like I'm watching highlights, like I'm spending 30 hours a week studying film of the two teams I'm calling. And so you lose, it's funny, as a game analyst, you lose a little bit of the connectivity that you had with the league when I was a studio analyst, right? Where I'm trying to watch a little bit of everything. And so, you know, from my perspective on the Bills is what I catch in the playoffs or what I catch on a Monday night or what, you know. And so I'm probably not the best to talk about that, but I think they're a damn good football team. I think defensively, some of the players they have really intrigued me, and I like, you know, I like what I've seen over the years. But that is always kind of my go-to comeback thing with the Bills is I think they put too much on their quarterback, and I'd like to see them take some of that off their quarterback.
So as I'm sitting here looking at the order for the NFL draft, it's eerily similar to when the Bills were in the position that Denver is now, where it's like, what are they going to do at quarterback? And the Bills were at 12 in the first round, and they had a deal in place with the Broncos to try and move up for a quarterback, but Chubb slips, and then they don't make the deal, and then they still can end up trading up and getting Josh Allen. Like, what do you think is going to happen? Are they going to be aggressive? Are they going to move up? Are they just going to kind of see how the board falls? What's the sense in Denver right now?
Well, since in Denver, yeah, there's a lot of people that think they're going to move up. But, you know, on my own podcast, which I do weekly, several days a week, called the Stinkin' Truth Podcast, I said, you know, remember the song by the Pretenders, Brass in the Pocket? There's no brass in the pocket. I don't know that any of these quarterbacks is good enough to say, hey, let's mortgage our future and move up. And I think one of the things that's interesting to me about the draft in general is that, you know, 75% of these quarterbacks are not going to pan out, right? They're not going to win for the team that drafted them. They're not taking their team to a championship. I mean, it's just the odds. It's the way it is. And you end up pushing all these guys up to where, you know, you're taking them above the best football players in this draft. And I don't think that's like, I don't ever think that's the right answer. Just pick a quarterback, any quarterback. Like, you've got to be in love with the guy. You got to believe that guy is going to make it. I mean, I'll take you through like Michael Penix. I'm sure that he's great. And I've watched enough tape on him. You know, I went back through his college career and watched three or four games of Michael Penix on the coach's tape, not the game tape, but the coach's tape. And, you know, there are a lot of nice things about him, but this is a guy that 2 weeks ago people were talking about end of the first round, maybe the second round. He runs a 4.5 40, and now he's potentially going 12 overall if the Seahawks trade. You know, I mean, and I just think it like what changed in his film? This guy scrambled last year for 8 yards. Like, when all of a sudden does running a 4.5 40, it doesn't mean jack at the quarterback. I don't care how fast he runs. It means nothing to me. But again, it's just checking boxes. Oh, now all of a sudden he's a better athlete than we assumed he was. So now all of a sudden, if he doesn't play well, that's the coach's fault. That's not our fault, the scouts or general managers. That's the coach's fault. So I just get to the point where I look at the situation. If all these guys get pushed up and everybody gets taken in the first 5 or 6 picks, you're going to have a damn good football player, theoretically, that falls to you at 12. Why would you move up and go chase a more often than not bust candidate? Now, it worked in the you talking about the Bills. It worked when the Bills moved up to get Josh Allen. But like that 2018 draft class, everybody talked about that 2018 draft class being the next, 83, the class of 83, that had Elway and that had Kelly and that had Marino and that had Tony Eason and had Todd Blackledge. Come on, Josh Allen's the only one. Now, I don't count Lamar, who they moved back in the first round, 32 overall to grab. I don't count him in that, upper echelon group of quarterbacks that everybody said was can't miss proposition. There's only one guy that made it. And it was Josh. And let's be honest, in his first 2 or 3 years where he was running almost as much as he was throwing the ball, there were a lot of question marks.
Yeah.
As he was learning the NFL game. So I look at them saying, hey man, stand pat, get yourself a great football player. If one of the quarterbacks falls to you at 12 that you love and you loved him anyhow, then I can see you taking him. But I just think they've got so many other holes to fill that the best football player available would probably make the most sense.
And the amazing thing about the Josh Allen pick was when the Bills traded up to take whoever it was going to be, so many people wanted Josh Rosen because they were like, that's the guy who's the can't miss Josh Allen. Who knows what he's going to be?
Right.
Everybody thought Sam Darnold was a lock to be an unbelievable pro. They thought Baker was a lock to be an unbelievable pro. And they get Josh Allen. And I think a lot of the fan base did groan and panic that this team was going to kind of be in quarterback purgatory for the next decade. And then Josh Allen turns into Josh Allen.
Yeah.
So it all, it works out.
What's crazy about that, and what always kind of just befuddles me, is a lot of people talked about his accuracy in college. That he only completed 50 whatever percent of his passes. Well, one of the things that's hard to evaluate with college quarterbacks in today's college game is it's very static, spread formations, very static, and you're picking the best matchup. There's not a lot of progression throws that happen in college football. So you're saying, hey, man, I'm spreading you guys out 5 wides essentially, or we motion a back out, right, whatever it is. And there's not a lot of motion. There's not a lot of change of strength. There's not a lot of reading. It's like, where's my best matchup? Let me throw to that guy. If that guy's not open, pull the ball, scramble around, and then make a play. And so college football, when you watch it, it doesn't really relate to the NFL very well. There's not a whole lot that goes on. This is why J.J. McCarthy shoots up draft boards, because in Michigan, they lined up with multiple tight ends and multiple back sets, and they changed – they shifted formations and they got strength change, and he had to make some decisions from a progression standpoint. And I think that's one of the reasons people find him intriguing, that he could probably line up and spit a play out in the huddle, as opposed to, the guy that's been looking at the sideline and going rooster chicken barn on two, let's go, So like there's more things that are transferable. When you're talking about JJ, from calling plays and doing all that stuff. So it just is, it's a fascinating process to me to watch these quarterbacks and watch how limited the systems are in the college game. But going back to Josh Allen, I was a big Josh Allen fan coming out of Wyoming. And that's close to where we are here in Denver. It's about a 3-hour drive. But I'm like, one, there is no wide receiver in America that wants to go to Wyoming. Right?
Yep.
So you got limited talent. You're limited talent. Two, they actually played in a pro-style system where they pushed the ball down the football field. And if you've ever been to Laramie, Wyoming, I have, it is a freaking wind tunnel. So I went up there for an event, and it's like I'm in shorts and T-shirts here in Denver. It's 82 degrees. I drive to Laramie. It's 46 and dropping, and it starts snowing that night. And I had just left 3 hours ago from Denver in shorts and a t-shirt. I'm like, this place is different. Like, so I looked at all those factors to go, plays in a pro style offense, pushes the ball down a football field with limited talent because nobody wants to, that catches a football and wants to go to Laramie, Wyoming. And the thing is a freaking wind tunnel. I think he's going to be all right, you know, and it did. It turned out great. As a matter of fact, I did an event with him at the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And I think he's witty. I think he's incredibly smart. I'm flipping him crap during we're doing this kind of chalk talk thing, and I'm flipping him crap, and he's coming right back over the top and giving it right back to me. And I was like, okay, I dig this kid. He's a great kid, man. I enjoyed the heck out of it.
He's a football player too. You know what you were talking about just a little bit ago about, like, he is a football player, and there is something to be said when your quarterback is also like that. I think the guys in the locker room kind of ride for him. The last one for me is, do you have players that you like in the draft, regardless of a position, who you're like, ooh, I love that guy. I think he's going to be a really good pro.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I watched a bunch of the offensive linemen that I think the kid from Oregon State, I can't remember. Yeah, there's a bunch of Samoan kids, which I don't even try to pronounce those guys. I just hope, like, when I'm calling a game, and I get those names, I just, like, I hope that guy's inactive. Like, I just hope, like, yeah, I hope you guys don't dress him. A couple of the offensive linemen, I love the kid from Oregon State. I love a couple of the kids. The kid from Washington is a good player as well. Bowers, the tight end from Georgia, is a guy that I really liked. Just because he's one of those guys, like, I always tell people, like, especially in today's NFL, that tight end position after the quarterback position, you're probably responsible for more from a knowledge based standpoint than any other position, because you got to be able to line up as that Y guy, you know, on the line of, end of the line of scrimmage. You got to be able to split out in the slot, outside the numbers. So you have to have all the routes, you know, the outside the numbers routes, the inside the slot routes. You know, you've got to have that tight end route. Then you got to be the backup tight end or the F tight end as well, the movement guy. You know, if you get to 12 personnel, now all of a sudden, instead of the slot guy being the movement guy, now it's the backside tight end being the movement guy. You got to be able to do that. Oh, by the way, we want to line you up at fullback occasionally. So now you got to understand that you know, there is the F slot receiver, the F tight end, and the F is a fullback. You've got to know what personnel package you're in, depending on which one you're going to run. Like, this is how the West Coast offense works. So now all of a sudden I'm the F, but I'm the fullback. And so now it's entry points in the run blocking game and all that kind of stuff. And so I think there's, like, for the good ones, like the George Kittles of the world, the guys that run that system, man, they are responsible for a ton mentally. Next to the quarterback, it's the second most, like, to me, it's the second most volume of stuff that you need to know on the offensive side of the ball. So if you can find one of those guys, and Bowers is a willing participant in the blocking game, he'll do that. He'll line up on the edge of the line of scrimmage. You know, he'll do all those things. Also run the ball and jet sweeps and all kinds of stuff. So athletically, he's gifted. Run out of the catch, he's really good. That's a real good football player that somebody's going to get that excites me.
For sure. Mark, tell everybody where they can follow all your stuff, watch you, listen to you.
Mark Schlereth, Instagram, on X. The Stink of Truth podcast. If you want to follow me on YouTube, the Stink of Truth podcast, you can also get that, you know, audio wise anywhere you follow podcasts. And 104.3 The Fan, and then I call games on Fox on Sundays.
You're busy, huh? Do you have any downtime? Like, what do you do in your downtime?
I pick up my grandkids from school. Is pretty much what I do. And during football season, it is full go. I mean, I don't stop. Like, I'm constantly studying, constantly. I go from my radio show right to my office, and I just sit and study, and then I take an hour break to go pick up my granddaughters from school. But other than that, I'm traveling, I'm watching film, I'm just studying the game. So, but that's, you know, that's what I like to do. I'm a junkie that way, so I like it.
All right, everybody, follow, listen to Mark. Thank you for joining us. It is much appreciated.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
All right, much love to Mark Schlereth for joining us on the podcast. When I was doing the little research on him before, I knew that he had won a bunch of Super Bowls, but I did not know that one of those Super Bowls was against the Bills. So I'm sorry if that was hard for you to listen to as he went back and recalled all of that stuff from the week. It's funny, I've watched the 30 for 30, the four falls from Buffalo, and I remember in that documentary the comments about the offensive line and how the Bills' defensive line thought that they were going to go out there and eat. And as Mark said, that did not happen. So I know that that was probably not great for some people, but thanks for bearing with us up to this point. So I do think, though, Mark brings up a lot of good points about the Bills. I think it's really interesting to hear the outside perspective, especially from him, somebody who played the game, about Josh Allen having to do a little bit too much, because I feel like that's the Bills' blessing and their curse, right? It's both things. The reason why they have been such a dynamic, competitive team is because their best player, Josh Allen, can go toe-to-toe with literally any other player in the league, including Patrick Mahomes. But the curse is sometimes it all falls on his shoulders, and that's why the big mistake happens, or they come up short when you think that they're overall a better team. I do think that as Joe Brady took over last year, that changed a little bit. They started to incorporate a lot more players in the offense that took a little bit of pressure off Josh Allen. And maybe that means the fantasy numbers aren't as great, or the MVP odds aren't as great, but the team is having more success. I know Josh would trade that. I know the team would trade that. Josh would take that Cowboys game last year where he barely did anything and they won convincingly in every single playoff game that they play. He has played elite, put up incredible numbers in a lot of these playoff games, and sometimes they have still fallen short. So I think that was really interesting perspective from Mark. So I appreciate him joining us. Okay. Like I said at the beginning, now Mike, producer, does not know that we're talking about this now, so we're going to see what his reaction is. I don't know if I'm a Disney adult, but I'm close. And that's like a scary thing to admit, because if I know some of the ways that people like perceive the term Disney adult, first off, there's nothing wrong with that. Like what you want to like. Who am I to judge you? And if you're listening to this, I hope you don't judge me any differently on this. But Disney is freaking awesome, regardless of your age. And going there with a one-year-old, a lot of people warned me about how it's a waste of time because they're not going to remember any of it. I know that. It is just as much. It's not even just as much. It is completely for myself, for my wife and I. We bring our one-year-old to Disney knowing that she has no idea what's going on. But trying to live the experience through her eyes is so magical. You know, I'm sorry to sound so cheesy and so cliche, but going on those rides and looking at her more than I was looking at actually what was going on was so adorable and it was so fun. So I really, really enjoyed it, even with a one-year-old. I know that everything football related that we talked about on this podcast will probably be overshadowed by these 3 minutes, because I think it is a hot button topic. If people are going to be like, oh, I don't care about the wide receivers, but what did you think about Disney World? Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind is the best ride. Like, if you're not talking about nostalgia, there's a lot of, you could say, oh, Tower of Terror is my favorite ride. You could say Pirates of the Caribbean, whatever. If you're very nostalgic, those deserve to be in the conversation. But from a strictly ride standpoint, Cosmic Rewind is so good. So if you've been on it, responds to the posts about this episode of the podcast. Let me know if I'm missing something here, but I think that is far and away the best ride at Walt Disney World. I've been to Disneyland once, but I think it would be hard to beat having all four parks at Disney World. We did not do all four parks this time. We did two. We did a day at Epcot and we did a day at Magic Kingdom. Epcot's saving grace for us, I mean, with a one-year-old, like it's not like we were really going drinking around the world or anything like that. Guardians ride kind of saved the day for Epcot. We probably should have done 2 days at Magic Kingdom because there was just so much more our daughter could do at Magic Kingdom than she could have done at Epcot. We took her on the Frozen ride. That was a nice ride. We took her on the Finding Nemo ride, Nemo and Friends, whatever it is. There was like the Turtle Talk with Crush. She legitimately fell asleep in the middle of Spaceship Earth at Epcot, which is the most relatable thing somebody could do inside Spaceship Earth. Magic Kingdom, though, was very fun. Like, we could take her on Haunted Mansion. We could take her on Pirates of the Caribbean. We took her on Jungle Cruise. So a bunch of really great rides. She loved the People Mover, which I have a soft spot for. That might be my favorite ride, even if Guardians is the best ride. I think those are different category. Favorite and best do not necessarily equal each other. So Disney was awesome. So we'll talk more about it if you want to, but I loved Disney World. I already cannot wait to go back. I'm starting to like get the wheels going in my head a little bit of, well, when does it make sense to go back again, considering she's one? Does it ever make sense to buy a season pass to go multiple times a year? like all of these different things. So that's why I'm close. Like I don't go, no shit, whatever you want to do. I don't do the ears. I don't do the like themed t-shirts or anything. If you do that, continue to do that. That's awesome. But I really enjoy Disney World and I want to talk about Disney World a lot. So I will over the course of the next several months or whatever until maybe the magic wears off, but we shall see. But that is just my quick little wrap on my trip to Disney World because I know a couple of people asked about it. Even if you didn't ask about it, I was going to talk about it anyway because I'm still kind of riding that high. We'll get the Sal perspective on Australia when he comes back. We'll do another episode later in the week. I've reached out to our friends over at Buffalo Plus, 13 Wham in Rochester. They are scheduled to join us later in the week. So we'll talk to them more about the Bills, wide receiver, the draft, what the team should be doing. But shout out Mark Schlereth. We appreciate him joining us. Thanks for listening to this episode. We'll get you another one soon, and then we'll hear all about Sal's big adventure over to Australia. But for now, for Matt Bove, for our producer, Mike Rabier, thanks for listening to another episode of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. We'll catch up with you soon.